So, just a little housekeeping points here. So we had it set up for once a month, but we want to make sure to get two in before the end of the semester. So that's why there's one scheduled for now, and also one scheduled, Mirz Hashem, for 2 weeks from today. So that's our next agenda, today and 2 weeks from today. And just to get a sense of what we want to cover in that time, so the last time we tried to just lay out what the basic concepts are, what the basic sources are, and maybe we'll quickly do a two-minute recap of that. And for today, and I think next time, I want to try to get a sense of what exactly is so bad about Lashon Hara. Why is it considered to be so harmful and subject to so many different statements, both of specific halachic context, both of general moral criticism and the like? Why is it so damaging? So that's what I'd like to start today, and I think it will be a topic that will continue from today into our next session 2 weeks from today. Okay, sound like a plan? Just a very quick 1 minute recap. That last time we established that there are a number of sources for Lashon Hara in the Torah, including most often quoted the Pasuk in Kedoshim, L'Selech Rachel B'Yamecha, also the Pasuk in Parshas Kiseitse, V'Nishmartem, and Mikol Davara. Davara could be understood as Dibura, and as well the idea of Lo Sisa Shema Shav, one should not accept a report that is Shav. We'll have to discuss the nature of that word, but that the Gemara invokes both from the context of Kabbalah Lashon Hara, which we'll have to explain in of itself, and of speaking Lashon Hara, and also the various references to Tsaras and to Miriam, the subtext of Parshas Tazria Metzora, and the more explicit story of Miriam and her Onesh, and the statements later on in Sefer Dvarim telling us to remember the Maisa of Miriam, Ramban counting that as a mitzvah, and also right there as well, Hishomer Benega Hatzaras, that we should be careful regarding Tsaras, and presumably also that which causes it. We're also told in Parshas Kisavo, Aurora Makarehu Basoser, that whoever hits someone else in secret from behind is considered to be cursed, and Rashi there quotes the idea that that's about speaking about Lashon Hara behind someone's back. And we also talked about the basic terminology as laid out by the Rambam and the Chafetz Chaim. We noted that it's not the only way to understand these terms, but the way they break it down, starting from the Rambam, is that if you disparage someone with factual information, that's Lashon Hara. If you make something up out of the blue, so that is Motzi Shemra. And if you tell people things that will rile them up, or if you talk about what's being said about people, that's Rechilus. The Kesef Mishnah assumes he means telling people what was said about them, because it'll get them all riled up. And then the Rambam also notes that if somebody transcends all of these activities and makes them into daily activities, things that they do on a regular basis, that person becomes a Baal Lashon Hara, and some of the more intense statements that we find in Shas are really directed at him. That was a lot of what we had laid out as an introduction. I think we started to mention, I don't remember if we got into this, that these terms, again, it's the Rambam's terms, the Chafetz Chaim works off of this pretty much as well, not everyone agreed that it's not clear the Gemara uses these terms this way. And the Gemara, it sounds more like Lashon Hara is an umbrella term for all of these things, that Rechilus is also an umbrella term for all of these things. There are many statements in the Gemara where Lashon Hara sounds like it's referring to something false, as opposed to this specific definition system, so we'll have to see a little more about that. And among the Rishon, among the later Sfarim, you do find different ways of breaking the terms down. So, for example, Rabbeinu Yonah understands that the difference between Lashon Hara and Motzi Shemra is more just a question of degree, that Lashon Hara is a small, localized statements about somebody, while if it reaches the point where you have actually changed someone's reputation for the worse, given somebody a bad name, you literally motzi shem ra, so that's what we mean by motzi shem ra. And another interpretation the Kadra Glover Rav, more recently, you can see his picture on the wall in the library in 5A, he understood that Lashon Hara is anything true or false, as long as it's not consequential, as long as it's not important. If it's important, then it's not Lashon Hara unless it's false. So again, it's just a different system, and it doesn't really matter because all of these activities are going to be prohibited one way or another, but it matters just in terms of understanding earlier sources and in terms of knowing how to build a theory and a working understanding of what's going on, so that's where it may make a difference. Okay, so that's basically to get us up to this point. So far, so good? All right, so let's try to begin an understanding of what is the harm of Lashon Hara. Why is it so bad? So here, we can borrow a statement from the Gemara. As you said, there are many, many statements. Rav Chaim Palagi, in one of his farm, lists about 40 statements in Shas that just talk about how Lashon Hara is the worst thing ever. But there's one particular statement that I'm going to borrow from Maseches Erchin. I say borrow because we'll define it a little differently than the Rishonim define it. But it's a useful framework for us. So the Gemara there says that Lashon Hara is also referred to by the name Tlitoi, meaning triple or three-part, because Lashon Hara Horeges Shlosha. Lashon Hara kills three. And who are the three? The three are the subject, the speaker, and also the listener. So let's use that framework to try to identify how each of those three are hurt. Even again, if you look at Rashi over there, look at some of the Rishonim, there's a more elaborate explanation of what that statement means. But as a useful framework for us, just to consider more broadly, how are each of the three hurt? So the most obvious is the subject, like the person you're speaking about. That's easiest to understand because they are presumably being hurt in two ways. One, just the reputation suffering, that's a harm. That's something that we recognize as value, both in civil law and in halacha. We recognize the value of a reputation as something that's real. That's an actual asset. In fact, as the Mishnah says, that the keser shem tov is perhaps the greatest asset you can have. So harming someone's reputation is real damage. That we recognize. And we can move from that into other forms of damage. Once a person has been labeled a certain way, a person has been targeted in a certain way, they could lose out in opportunities, they could lose business opportunities, they could lose shidduch opportunities, they could lose all kinds of things that they either have or could potentially have. They could suffer in all kinds of other ways once they're being painted in this negative light. So when we talk about the subject, it's not hard to understand what this statement means. It's clear that there are those two very sweeping categories that refer to the subject, and those are ways in which the subject suffers. But what is a little bit challenging, and this is something we're going to have to develop over the course of the next couple of discussions, is that you might say, well, but sometimes it's fair. But sometimes it has to be. If the person has done things that deserve to be condemned or deserve to have people warned about, so then, okay, the reputation should pay a price. And one could fairly ask, what is the point of a reputation? Why would we say reputation is so valuable if we're also going to say that everyone is guaranteed a completely protected reputation? And a reputation presumably only is what it is because people are saying things that are reasonably true. So if we're going to stop you from saying things that are negative and that are true, right? If we're assuming that Lashon Hara includes that which is true, so then doesn't that undermine the whole concept of reputation? Right? Everyone's reputation is going to be artificial. So that's a major question that we're going to have to deal with, and I think that's a part of what we'll get to next time. But in this first category of how the subject is hurt, On the one hand, it's easy to understand. On the other hand, maybe not so easy to understand, because maybe these are impacts that should happen, or at least to a certain degree, and that's something we'll need to address. Okay, so far so good. So then, keeping that in the back of our minds, let's move into the second category. How is the speaker hurt by Lashon Hara? Any thoughts? How is the speaker hurt by Lashon Hara?
The nidum, the person being spoken about, is going to take revenge on him.
Okay, right. So you think that much he maybe knows what he's getting in for. But that certainly is the way Rishonim discussed that could happen also, especially if we're talking about bringing the Rechilos part into the discussion, that maybe he thought he was saying it without being known, and then he gets caught later, maybe. But the couple of other aspects also, in a broader sense. Hi. Okay, so an Aveira brings consequences with it, and that's also true, yeah? Okay, so he's going to hurt his own reputation, which is also interesting. So let's expand on a mixture of all of these points. So, first of all, just very philosophically, there is a point that you'll find in a lot of Svarim that speech is a very holy attribute, and that speech is one of the defining, maybe the defining, characteristics of human beings as opposed to animals and other creatures. And it's supposed to represent a godliness, and this is often built on an unculus in the beginning of the Torah in Bereishis, where v'yipach ba'apav nishmas chayim. So there, unculus translates ruach memalva, a speaking spirit. That the idea that to be able to speak and to express ourselves, to have thoughts that are worthy of expressing, and to bring them out into the open, this is one of the core defining attributes of humanity. And therefore, to mistreat that ability, to use it for bad, to use it to hurt people, that's something which has a particular stain associated with it. That's something which you get a lot of criticism for. So there's that aspect, which is very philosophical, and it's something that you can find some extensive writings about. And it's also interesting to consider a couple of other components. You know, there is a machlokas that you'd be surprised it's a machlokas. You wouldn't think, especially if you've heard enough Moser Shmuzin, you would not think that this is a controversial statement. You would not think that this is something anyone would argue on. But nonetheless, it is. What's the surprising controversy? The Chafetz Chaim has a statement which received objection from great Gedolim, and you wouldn't expect it. That we know the Chafetz Chaim in the beginning of his Sefer, so he lists his whole picture of all the different aveiros you can do when speaking Lashon Hara. So like last time we mentioned there are a number of psukim in the Torah that seem to be directly addressing Lashon Hara. And of course some you have to search a little harder for. You have to make a scenario that's a little more creative in order to bring them into the picture. So if you speak Lashon Hara about your parents on Shabbos in a shul, so you're violating Kibbut Aveim and Mor Beis HaMikdash and Mor Shabbos, so okay. But some of them are a little more of a stretch. So the one that was surprisingly controversial is that the Chafetz Chaim wrote that it's Achil Hashem. Lashon Hara is Achil Hashem. And believe it or not, the Chazon Ish and others agreed with the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish said, no, it's not. It's not Achil Hashem. What are they arguing about? Again, so if you've heard Musar Shmuzin, and you see it's not such a high threshold to be considered a Chil Hashem. You never heard anyone give any pushback on something like this before. So why would it be objectionable for the Chafetz Chaim to write that it's a Chil Hashem? So the nature of the debate seems to be that the question is, why is he saying that? So the truth is, there are a few reasons why he says that. People mention some of the secondary reasons first, because that's not what attracted the whole controversy. So one thing he notes is that if you have an Aveira that is really a serious Aveira, but people take it lightly, people have a frivolous attitude towards it, that's a Chil Hashem. So if that's the definition, then yeah, Ein Lecha Chil Hashem Gadol Mizeh. I mean, what else is an example of that, where you have a very serious transgression that people take lightly and people joke about? So yes, then very much so. There's no question Lashon Hara is a good candidate for that definition. Elsewhere, he mentions another factor. He says, Achil Hashem is an Aveira which tends to build upon itself, that the more you try to fight it, the more it expands. So here also, Lashon Hara works well with that definition, because I'm sure you've all experienced that it's very hard to distract someone off the path of Lashon Hara, because often it backfires. So a person, nobody wants to be caught, so to speak, speaking Lashon Hara. So if you tell somebody what they're saying is Lashon Hara, so usually the response will be, oh, you think it's not justified what I'm saying? I'll tell you why it's super justified. I'll tell you why it's super necessary. And they'll double down and they'll say much more. So it's the kind of aveira which it's like a little bit like the tzfardeya. You know, the more you hit it, the more it doubles, the more it expands. So maybe you call it a Achil Hashem for that reason. But the controversial reason that he gave is that it says Achil Hashem because it's not like stealing or eating treif or something like that, which people have Yetzer Hara for. It's okay if somebody stole money, he wants money, so now he stole the money. If somebody ate treif, okay, he couldn't resist. The cheeseburger was so attractive, that he is so tempting, that he felt he had to eat it, okay. But Lashon Hara, he says, there's no hana, there's no personal benefit. So therefore, why would anyone do it except to anger God, except just to be a bad person? So that detail was controversial, even though it's based on the Gemara. There's a Gemara that sounds a little bit like that. The Gemara Masechet Tainis, Ma'istro on the Baal HaLashon, talks about the Nachash, and it conveys an implication like that. But the Chazon Ish and others have said it's not true that there's no Hana. And the Chazon Ish wrote that the fact that the Chafetz Chaim could say such a thing, said this is proof that the holy author Lo Tam Tam Lashon Hara B'chayev. He must have never tasted Lashon Hara, he must have never experienced it, because if you think there's no Hana, there's no temptation, then he just must have been completely separated from it. Hi.
I thought the Chafetz Chaim means there's no physical Hana from it.
So that's one possible understanding. Presumably the Chafetz Chaim understood this objection, and he probably did mean something else. You could also have meant that the Hana is just not something that's significant enough, that it's a minor Hana and it's a major Churban that comes out of it, literal Churban according to Gemara. It's one of the first points that the whole actual Churban is because of Lashon Hara, but whatever other the damage is so disproportionate to the Hana that he considers it to be no Hana. But it's interesting that this was a controversial point. Usually when the Bali Musar say something is the Chil Hashem, we normally take it, but accept that it is. But so the idea that this is something that was a debated point is interesting, especially because, okay, so we can understand in a certain sense what the Hana is. And the Hana, you know, doesn't just have to be negative, which could also be what the Chafetz Chaim meant. Maybe you say, okay, there's a Hana that comes out of knocking people down, but that's a purely negative Hana as opposed to stealing money. Okay, that's the positive desire to have the money. That just doesn't come from a desire to hurt you. So maybe that's what he's understanding, that the Hana is a negative Hana. But perhaps the biggest Hana, so to speak, the biggest Yetzer Hara that we have for Lashon Hara, and it's probably at the root of a good percentage of Lashon Hara, and the rest of it maybe we'll see next time, but probably the basis of a good chunk of Lashon Hara is a midah that Chazal were very, very critical of. It's a statement in the Bavli, but there's a much stronger statement in the Yerushalmi and in the Rambam. And that is a midah called Miskabed Biklon Chavero, that somebody who seeks to get kavod in this world, not through doing things that get him credit, not through accomplishing things, but through knocking the other person down. If that's how you seek to build yourself up in this world, by knocking the other person down, miskabed b'klon chavero, the Rambam says, ein l'chelek l'olam haba. The Bavli has a softer way of criticizing it, but it's considered to be a very, very negative kind of behavior. Hi. Yeah. I actually have a magic marker. So rare that I have one of those. Okay, oh no. Does it work? Okay. Kind of works. Can you see that? That's pretty faint. Yeah, the clone, Javero. the knocking down, the lightning of somebody else. So the idea of being miskave b'klon chavero is one of the major attributes that Chazal criticized. And we could understand that as being at the root of a lot of Lashon Hara. Now, why are we tempted to speak about somebody in a negative way? Because we feel we'll look better in comparison. So here it's interesting to note, so we said there's so many statements in the Talmud that tell you how terrible Lashon Hara is. One of the scarier statements, which is widely quoted, isn't really in the Talmud. Its earliest clear source is the Chovos HaLevavos, right? One of the classic Sifrei Musar from the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Bachya. So the Chovos HaLevavos is probably the first source for this. Although some of the Achronim and the Chofetz Chaim included, they show where you could find this idea in Midrashim, in the earlier rabbinic literature. But the notion is as follows. So after Mayav Astrum Shana, you'll go up to Shemayim, ready to collect your reward for all of the wonderful things you did in this world. And you'll go to check out your account, you'll put in your PIN number and your password, and you'll open up the account, and what are you going to see? You're going to be totally shocked. All the mitzvahs that you thought you had collected over the course of your life, they're gone. And instead, there's a list of averos that you don't remember doing. So what happened? How did you lose all your mitzvahs? How did you get all these crazy averos? So says the Chovos HaLevavos that's what happens when you speak Lashon Hara about somebody. That you must have indulged in this avera. And the consequence is, when you do that, so you get all their averos and they get all your mitzvos. Bad deal, right? That's really scary. So why should that happen? Why is that appropriate? Why is that a midah keneged midah? So this is discussed a few places in the writings of Rav Dessler in the Michta of Meliyahu. That the Michta of Meliyahu writes, one explanation he gives is that it's an appropriate punishment because the degree of damage you can do to someone else when you talk about them is calibrated to your stature. If you're a person who is prominent and who is taken seriously, so then when you speak badly about others, it's going to have a very big effect. If you're a person who's not respected so much and nobody pays attention to, so it's not going to have so much of an effect. So therefore, if you're trying to hurt someone with your stature, essentially, so it's an appropriate punishment, a consequence that your stature is diminished. But alternatively, he also writes that assuming that miskabe b'klon chavero is so much the driving force here, so it's appropriate that it should have the opposite effect, that here you're trying to build yourself up by stepping on the other guy. So instead, the opposite happens. He gets built up, and you get knocked down. So that's perhaps the way to look at it. But it's also interesting that you don't have to necessarily go to this very mystical, otherworldly take on it and the whole midah keneged midah, the picture of what's happening. I think, as you pointed out, we also see this happening just in the real world of normal human interaction, that very often people have this attribute that they want to knock somebody else down, and therefore they speak negatively. But usually what happens, or a lot of the times what happens, is that people are smarter than that, the people who are listening, so they see what's going on, they understand the motive, and instead of it having the intended effect of disparaging the subject and making the speaker loftier, it ends up having the real-world impact that the listeners have less respect for the speaker, like you were saying, right? That he's perceived as somebody who just is looking to knock everyone else down, and that itself will be a cause of disrespect for him. So even without having to read the Chovos HaLevavos' whole nevuah of what's going to happen, but just in terms of what we see in front of us, there is that impact that tends to backfire. And people who are savvy, they recognize that that's what's happening, and it has that impact. Now, there's a third component here, and this is especially important to mention now, because this is a framework which is going to be relevant to the entire discussion of Lashon Hara from here on in. So take special note of this point. And that is that Lashon Hara, from a Kalamdisha perspective or a conceptual perspective, you find there are two different ways of framing what's going on. And you find both of these in Rabbeinu Yonah. If you read carefully, maybe you find both of these in the Rambam, in the seventh parak of Hilchos Deis. could be that there are two different aspects of Lashon Hara. One is that it's a form of hezek. It's that it's a form of causing damage to someone, as we mentioned in our first category today. It's probably grumma, benezikin. It's not the kind of hezek that you can get sued for, that we read about in Parshas Mishpatim, that you have to pay damages for, because it's at a remove, it's a grumma. So if I break your car with a sledgehammer, then you can make me pay for the damage. If I say lashon hara about you to your boss, and he fires you and you lose the money, so that's a grumma, that's indirect. But grumma benezikin, even if you can't collect for it, as some of the Chofetz Chaim discusses, grumma benezikin is aser, it's still prohibited to cause somebody a loss. So that could be a category for lashon hara. It's simply about damaging people and causing people to potentially be damaged. But it could also be that it is a negative midah, that it is a midah ra, it is something which stains your character, and that's a big problem. And that's something which has a very negative impact just on who you are. And this question, is lashon hara more about causing someone to suffer, about grumma benezikin, or is it about the impact that it has on the speaker, about the stain that it imparts on your midos, about the way in which it diminishes you? That's a big discussion, and we'll see that kind of looming in the background of a lot of the more specific topics that we'll talk about over the course of these discussions. So having that framework in mind is very valuable. If you want to take a look, you could see that perhaps in the Rambam, he seems to define Lashon Hara twice in this, the section Hilchos Deis, and a number of Achronim feel that's what he's doing. He's bringing up two different categories. First, the idea of hurting, first the idea of the midah, and then the idea simply that even without the midah, you could potentially be hurting people, and that's something to worry about. So that gives us three ways in which we could see the speaker being hurt. So we saw two ways in which the subject is being hurt, that his reputation is being hurt, and whatever else comes out of that could also be harm. And the speaker, now we see, could be hurt because they're betraying their humanity, the ruach mamala, because they are having the opposite impact of their miskaved b'klon chaveiro, because they're ending up lowering themselves in the process. And from a midos perspective, because they are doing such harm to who they are. So we only have 1 minute left, so I'll just introduce the topic that we'll pick up with, God willing, in 2 weeks. That is our third category, which I think could be used as an entry point into the whole larger question of why Lashon Hara is so problematic, especially if we work off the premise that Lashon Hara is true, which we have to figure out exactly how much that is the premise. But if we take that premise that Lashon Hara is factual, so why is it so terrible? Why is it so prohibited? One of the questions we raised today, right, that maybe the reputational harm is necessary and justified, so why is it so terrible? So here it's interesting to consider the role of the listener. The idea that there's a prohibition of Kabbalas Lashon Hara, what's the nature of that prohibition? What do we mean when we say that he is being hurt here as well? And the Rambam, with the surprising language of Yoser, that the listener is in the biggest trouble. We have to figure out what that means. Very surprising statement. There's a lot of questions, and even before we get a chance to properly understand what Kabbalas Lashon Hara really is, that's going to leave us with a lot of questions. And just on this issue of truth, that it's hard enough for me to hear that I can't say something which is true. I can't say something which is factual. But now you're going to tell me, not only can't I say it, but I can't believe it. Now you're really telling me I have to just be in willful denial of the truth. Is that really what the halacha is requiring? So all of those questions, or at least some of those questions, we will try to discuss, God willing, in 2 weeks. I thank you all for coming. Wish you an enjoyable lunch, and hope to see you in 2 weeks.